The gospel reading comes from the Gospel of St. John, chapter 6, verses 51 to 58, and you can find it on page 1076 in the church Bibles. Hear the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. Then the Jews began to argue sharply among themselves. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? But Jesus said to them, very truly, I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise them up at the last day. For my flesh is real food, and my blood is real drink. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your ancestors ate manna and died, but whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ.
As we said, I know it's the summer, so we have our young people and children with us, so meaty sermons, probably not what you're looking for right now. There'll be some jokes, don't worry. But I have, as I think I've done before here, but if anyone would like to do sermon bingo, which is there are some words that I'm going to say in my sermon, you can play sermon bingo. Would you like one? Come and get one. Where's Theo? Theo, can you help me out with this? Well, I haven't been here for a little while because I've been away visiting my mum. My mum never lives in places close to me. So she's currently living in Hong Kong, which means it's a long way to go and visit. She was here for my ordination, but then I went back with her and spent some time with her in Hong Kong. But what happened while I was away? There's been there's like stuff happening in this country, like all over the place. And I noticed as I sat looking at social media, TikTok, all the other stuff, detached where I was in Hong Kong, in a building that was looked after by people, getting my food brought to me by something called the something Panda, which is a like Deliveroo or Uber Eats, kind of living the holiday life, that I just couldn't quite work out how I felt about what was going on here, because I was detached and I was distant and I was maybe doing something internally. So I'm going to tell you a little story. I have this memory, and I'm not sure if I got it from my uncle who came here in the 70s, or my brother who kind of was born elsewhere and arrived here at 5, not speaking English. Or is it mine from the 90s when I was a teenager? I'm not quite sure. It's one of those memories that's elusive. It's over there somewhere. It's in the back of my head, and every now and then it comes up. But if you know the area, Blackheath has a fireworks display. We haven't had one for many years now. And we used to go. The whole of Lewisham is shut down. No one can drive anywhere. Everyone's complaining. Buses don't go through Blackheath. It is pandemonium. And I went this memory has me going there as a teenager. And as the fireworks stop, something happens. A group of people known as the National Front descend on the fireworks and chase me and my friends down into Lewisham, past Maggie's Calf, if you know where that is, a big place in Lewisham if you're used to fry-ups and all-you-can-eat breakfast, and back into New Cross, close to where I lived. I say I can't quite pin that memory down because it's one of those traumatic experiences that either come through stories in my family or is my own experience. But I've blocked it. It's been left somewhere. It's somewhere else. And I love that story, partly because it makes me question my memories. It makes me question my thought processes and who and what happens in my life. While I sat in Hong Kong, my mother told me some stories that came up for her while she heard about the horrible acts of violence against people of color and refugees in the UK. She told me of when she was teaching in Deptford and parents refused to let their children come into her class because she was black. And then by the end of the year, they realized that she was such a good teacher, she was the only one who was going to make their child succeed. So they were very happy that she'd taught. Those scenes, although I was detached, were a bit like deja vu for me. I lived through some of the times in the 80s and 90s where racial violence was quite real in Lewisham. But as I saw what was happening and I felt what was going on in my body, I realized I was doing three things. One, I was diminishing the stories, the things that were happening to protect myself. I was dismissing them, again, to protect myself. And three, I was distracting myself. Man, I wish I had known about this earlier. I had felt and responded to my body and my thought processes when I was a teenager in the same way I do now. I'll give you three examples of those three D's. I diminished. I said, that's happening somewhere else. I said, the devil's done that, that's Satan. It couldn't happen in Lewisham, not on ends. The man then will just turn up. They'll shut that down. Sorry to switch into my Southeast London twang. There's no way women, children, and men in Lewisham will allow this to happen here. Not where I was born, not the place of my birth. I diminished the real acts of violence that were hurting people by pushing them away. I dismissed it. I was sitting with my mum's friend whose son is going to come to school in Kent, and he's watching this stuff happen on the news. And he said to me, Chris, is it really like that in the UK? I said, no. Every now and again, things just pop off because people in power choose to force people to think about those who have nothing next to them as their enemy rather than the real one. Don't worry about that. Your son's going to be fine. He was scared. His son's coming to school in Kent. But I was pushing that away. I was dismissing his real thoughts. And then distraction. I have many tools for this. This is my favorite of all the ways to move away things of trauma and hurt. This is my favorite of all ways to diminish and to put away things that I don't want to deal with. Distraction is my favorite. I have social media. Everyone knows that I like TikTok. TikTok is my friend. One minute videos that I can endlessly scroll through. I have computer games. Computer games are amazing. Computer games are my friend as well. I love computer games. Computer games are beautiful. I have got my children into computer games so I can play computer games with them, knowing that it's really for me, not for them. I have cartoons. Cartoons are beautiful things. Cartoons help me not deal with the real world. They give me space. They give me endless joy. I don't have reading. That is not one of my joys. I don't do that. I do it for work. I don't do it for pleasure. And I have generally endlessly staring into space, hoping that things will change. Those distractions are amazing. They're great. They mean that I don't have to deal with the real challenges and things that happen. And I'm late to the party. I'm sure you guys have all been dealing with what's been happening here internally and have got to the point where you don't want to talk about it. This sermon, actually, not the one. But I think Jesus would want us to explore the internal things that happen to us when these things happen, rather than to push them away or to deal with them for a season, but then feel like it's too much and go, nah, I can't do that anymore. Ephesians is an interesting part of the Bible to fall upon while having these thoughts. The context of Ephesians is, we don't even know if this letter was meant for the Ephesus. We don't even know if it was meant for that people. It might be a general letter sent out to a region that just kind of got passed around. And by some scribal thing, the people who were writing out decided that it was better that it had a place that it needed to be to, so that it kind of meant something more. I'm sorry, Bridget, you said the letter was from Paul. And again, we don't even know if that's the case. We say it because that's the tradition and that is how it's been handed down. And it would have been no problem naming a letter from a significant person in the ancient world, because that's what they did. Significance came from the party, the person. But does this diminish the significance of the words in the letter? I'd say no. I'd say that although we can't pin it down, actually, we have to wrestle with what it says. And in this church, one of the things it says is, don't get drunk. Ooh, I've got a hand. No, don't get the pen. Don't get drunk. That's a church that loves alcohol, that my care gift is still stocked up in my cupboard with all the bottles of wine I was given when I started here a year ago. But I'm joking. It's not telling you not to drink. It might be if you wanted to, but I don't think it is. It's talking about a life spent in Christian worship, a life spent connected to God, a life spent looking for what it means to live in a world where sometimes it is evil. Sometimes it feels horrific. Sometimes it feels like there is no redemption, that death is the only thing. Hey! I didn't manufacture that feedback. There you go. All right, see who the next bow will be for whoever gets the most words. All right, now we'll find my place again. Ephesians is a hard passage sometimes. There is in chapter 6 the household codes around subjugation that sometimes been used in marriage. To make people feel like they should be less than. There is stuff about slavery and slaves obeying their master. There's all sorts of things in there that you might say, I don't really want to look at this passage. And we have to wrestle with those. I'm not going to deny them or say them. I think that whole noticing of the three D's is something we must do when we look at the Bible as well. But what I saw in passages, the passage in verse 5, and I went back a little bit to verse 14 because, like any good Bible passage, it starts with therefore or because of, and that means we need to look a little bit in front. And what it says is, awake, awake, and because Jesus wants to shine his light upon us, and then it comes into this passage. And what does that awake mean? What does it look like? We can read the Bible passages and think, okay, but what does that look like? What does my life look like? Awake, alive, not pushing the things away, not diminishing, distracting, or dismissing. real things that happen. What is it like to have holy attention? How do we do this? So I have been reading this book for about 3 years. It's called The Awakened Brain. And it just so happened to jump at me when this passage and this talk was happening. I bought it ages ago. If you see my social media, I said my two intellectual loves are theology and cognitive neuroscience, which makes me sound much better than I am. But my first degree is in cognitive neuroscience because I wanted to be a psychologist. I've said it here a few times. And I worked in mental health with young people, and then I worked with young people because that was my goal. And this book talks about the life-giving need for spirituality and some of the practices within it that can be empirically looked at through neuroscience as making your brain more able to cope with trauma and other adverse things that happen in our life. And I thought, wow, that really speaks into this awakened sense in Ephesians that we need to live in. So Lisa Miller, not me, has three things that she feels come out of spirituality and spiritual pursuits, things like prayer, meditation, worship, or wonder, gratitude, things that we should practice as Christians, things that God calls us to from Scripture. And when they've looked at these practices and people's brains, they've seen that they've made their brains more resilient, more connected, which means the information is flowing properly between the different pathways, and able to cope with external factors better. Interesting. First one was awakened attention. I had to notice what I was doing to push away personal trauma that I'd had growing up, maybe trauma from my family, and some of the traumatic experiences that I've experienced as a black man when seeing the stuff on the news and on my feeds. I had to notice it so I could deal with it. It was no good me saying, those people out there, they're horrible people, I don't like them. What was it doing to me? And I said to you, the three D's, dismiss, I distracted myself, and I diminished it. So in noticing that, I was able to think through and try and deal with them in myself. I thought that was very important. And having that awakened attention, having that seeking to notice what is happening, both internally and externally, is the start of that relationship that Christ calls us into. Be awake. Notice the people who, even when you think they're blocking you from doing what you want to do, are giving you the opportunity to do something different, opening doors for you and gateways. I'll tell you a little story. I was doing the gardening yesterday. I hate gardening. And I was bemoaning the fact I was doing gardening. But this sermon was happening in those moments. I was able to think and kind of work through some of the thoughts I was having, because I don't want to give you all of the thoughts I've had. That would be bad. To a point where it was salient and able to be spoken. So something that could have caused me annoyance, anger. Why am I doing this? It's my Saturday. I should be sitting on the sofa watching TV, playing games, cartoons. Was actually an opportunity for me to engage my brain and think and work things through. So that's the awakened attention. The next is awakened connection. We crave connection. We crave feeling known. In my old age, sometimes I say to myself, I would love to be a hermit in a cave where no one could bother me. I would sit there longing for my own space and time. No wants, no needs, nobody to ask me to do something. And the reality sets in that if I spend 6 hours by myself, I end up hating myself because I realize I'm no good without other people. I need them. We crave connection. And to have awakened connection means that our relationships, the people we bump into, the people we don't like, but we should or don't like and we shouldn't, all the different things that people have and are, we respond to it, we are open to it, and we realize what is happening in ourselves. And then lastly, Lisa Miller talks about the awakened heart, not one closed to experience even traumatic ones, but one that is open and learns and grows. She says these three things are part of how we have a healthy brain that deals with traumatic experiences. And then there was one other thing, integration. If you do nothing else, I want you to remember this word. Lots of you come to church every week. I have come to church my whole life. Can I remember many sermons? No. Can I remember any change that's happened in me? Maybe because I became a priest, I had to talk about it all the time. People say, oh, why did you become a priest? And then I have to talk about the change that's happened in me. Reality is, life is a journey and things happen and change happens and we have to reflect sometimes and learn from those things. But how we make change happen, how we make dealing with trauma and traumatic experience or dealing with life work is we integrate the things that happen. So what that means is we read a passage in the Bible and we interrogate it and we feel like this is telling me to live a certain way. We don't have to make that happen. We have to work it out in the reality of the world around us. It's no good going off in silent meditation, finding all sorts of deep spiritual gifts, coming back to London, coming back to the sound, the noise, the people, and going, I can't make this work. The two things have to come together. That's integration. These three ideas of awakened brain, awakened attention, awakened connection, awakened heart, sorry. So awakened attention, awakened connection, and awakened heart need to be integrated for them to actually work. We need to put them into our everyday lives. It needs to be something we make happen. So I have, where did I put those sheets? Too many bits of paper today. I put them in place. I don't know what's going on. Ah, there they are. So in the best way of doing this, we need to do stuff sometimes to make things go in. So you can either take this bit of paper and could I have some help? Just feel you're right. Just keep calling my son up. It makes it easier. If you like this, a piece of paper and a pen, you can do it this way or you can think it through. Give your sister some. She can help. I have got a brain, connections, and a heart. I like the real heart, not the kind of cartoony one. So we have a heart there. And there's a little space in between each one. And I just want us to think through maybe one thing or one word or one action that you're going to write in or draw or just look at on this paper. You can do it in your head. You don't have to do it on the paper, but the paper just helps us to remember. I've put the name of the book at the bottom, so if you'd like to have a look at that, you can. But when it comes to the awakened brain, I'd like us to think the awakened attention, which is the brain. I keep mixing those two up. The awakened attention, I'd like you to think about something you're going to do to keep your attention on what's happening around you rather than to distract yourself or dismiss it or to diminish what's happening. One thing you're going to do, not someone else, just you. In terms of connections, again, I want you to think of one thing you can think of that will help you with being attending to the connections you have, maybe the connections you don't have, or the things you bump into and bounce off of. And then with your heart, how are you going to keep an openness of heart? Especially too, and I say this to people you don't like, people whose actions hurt and diminish, people who, when you see what they've done, you think you deserve punishment. How are you going to deal with that? How are you going to keep an open heart to relationship in those circumstances? Because, and I say this having my mum's words ring in my head, which is, unless we're able to connect with people, having an open heart with people who are different from us, there is no chance of change. And I feel God's calling us as people to be awake, to be enlivened, to be responsive to, even though things aren't great or hurt or cause trauma. So we'll leave a little bit of silence while you look at those images or write on them. And then maybe in the notices, I can see who got the most words on their bingo and give you some sweets.